Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can do crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing. Share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances. But most of all, let's share our love. This is Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao, in India, Namaste, in Japan, Konnichiwa, in Korea, Annyeonghaseyo, in Russia, Zdravstvuyte, in Germany, Guten Tag, in Poland, Dzień dobry, in France, Bonjour, in Spain, Hola, in Italy, Ciao, in Egypt, Hasan Wasafan, in Ghana, Hakwaba, in Nigeria, Peleo, in South Africa, Saobona, in Senegal, Nangadek, in Kenya, Jambo, in Israel, Shalom, in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia. Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the On Air Radio Network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us for this Thursday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and we've got an exciting show planned for you today. Joining us as we shop with Zoe is a fabulous, he's an awesome and a motivational speaker, and someone with a story of triumph. So we'll be right back after these brief messages to bring to you our guest today on Shop with Zoe. And you want to meet Quante Bosco Adams and be inspired. We'll be right back in just a moment. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. So stay with us.
Hi, I'm and if you're watching, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to people.
These times,
people are using it to talk to everyone.
Friends, family members,
co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great. That means you're Somebody just choose an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. We produce programs. Our audience members are people who shop.
They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repair, transportation services, child care services. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your meeting. Just follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
Hi, I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
We are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and of course, every Thursday we shop with Zoe. And one of the things we've been learning as we connect our young people to a mindset that says, you are important, you are special, you are somebody worthy of respect. We're learning that our young people aren't always getting that message. And sometimes the things we say and do to them are damaging in ways we have no idea as parents. So today we want to take a look at how we as parents may be giving a message of failure and defeat to our children. And we want to hear from those who may have had to overcome the damaging effects of their own parents. Well, first let me bring in our Thursday host, Zoe, and then we're going to bring in our special guest, Grand Rising. Thank you so much for being here. And helping us to see really what is a universal problem. You know, especially us as mothers, we don't realize the effects of things we say to our children. We don't realize the impact we may have had on their lives. And we don't realize how much damage we've done until we see the effects of it in their lives. So today, we've invited a special guest to help give us a bit of insight. And as mothers, this might be a little difficult for us to hear, but we must. Because we're the first teachers. We're the first influence. We're the first definition of love that our children receive. And if we're not kind, if we're not compassionate, if we're not forgiving, if we're not understanding the impact of the way we respond to them, then we won't understand when they take missteps in life and cause themselves damage, because we're not realizing that all of their self-esteem came from what we gave them, what we said to them, what we did to them, and our attempts to be good parents. So I want to welcome to our show an amazing young man who is a story of overcoming obstacles to find his greater self. Our guest is Mr. Conte Bosco Adams. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Female.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah.
Hi, Zoe.
Well, we're really excited to have you. You know, we had a conversation because of the women, you know, our whole crew, you know, we've had experiences either with raising our own children or even raising other people's children. And, you know, we tend to think we did the greatest job because we're, you know, we think we're all enlightened and everything. But all of us have had that moment of truth with our own children where we had to face the fact that we may have said and done some things that were hurtful. And we didn't know because we raised them the way we were raised. And one of the things that I'm coming to terms with is the fact that many of us were raised with parents who believed that the way you make a child strong is to criticize them so that they will have the incentive to try to work hard to prove you wrong. That's where a lot of us were raised.
Yeah.
And we didn't learn until maybe recently that that's the most destructive thing you can do to a child. It doesn't motivate them.
You got the solution.
Yeah.
What do you need me for?
But you, of course. And you know, it always helps us to hear, especially the voices of men, because we don't realize how we affect men in the things we say and do, especially to our sons. So now you are a motivational speaker. You've come through probably one of the worst experiences a person can come through, which is prison. I mean, that pretty much is the epitome of one's own feeling of failure in life, and yet you've risen up from that experience, written a book about it, and now you're sharing your insights. But can you tell us a bit about your growing up and what were some of the experiences that shaped you and your self-image?
My environment shaped me. I grew up in Compton, California, South Los Angeles.
Wow.
And, of course, that's what people consider the hood. And the things that I was exposed to were all contributing factors to the person that I became and led me down that path, put me in prison. Being exposed to drugs, being exposed to gangs, being exposed to that ignorant sense of bravado that young boys like to be attracted to. Because the thing is, every young male wants to be a part of something. And most likely we're going to become a part of whatever organization or group that is easily accessible to us. And so growing up in Compton, where in the 80s, when the gang culture was at its height, I was naturally attracted to that. And then when you hear elders talking about these gangs as if they were mythical characters, you know, it made it even more alluring. And you know, I like to say that I was a product of my environment, a product of the remnants of slavery that affect many other black communities in the United States, And again, it goes back to the parents, but when we look at our parents didn't have any paradigm or blueprint to follow either. And so it's just been this repetitive cycle that's been going on for 400 years when it comes to raising black men in America.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of us are learning that we're collectively responsible for this environment that we have created. And even though we want to blame others, we really have to look at ourselves, because there's nothing more influential than what's happening in your household.
True.
And there are many young men, as you say, they have a desire to belong to something or feel a part of something or feel accepted by something. But what I've observed is that if in your family there's a feeling of belonging, there is a feeling of purpose, there's a feeling that you represent something that you want to continue, you know, as a matter of pride, that lure of the gang culture tends to be lessened, because you can go home and get that feeling of acceptance and self-esteem. So let me ask you, what was home like for you?
I grew up, it was my mother and two sisters.
And your father was where?
Either in the streets or in prison.
And that's unfortunately been the story for a lot of us.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that women are just now learning is that we can't substitute a father figure. And I have several friends who have been single mothers, and they thought, well, you know, a father is tough, so if I'm tough on my son, then that'll substitute him not having that father. And they don't realize that what boys need is like girls. You need the balance. You need the toughness, but you also need the softness and the nurturing. And when boys don't get that from their mothers, because their mothers are trying to compensate for the absence of the fathers by being tough, they really feel that missing feeling of being loved and nurtured. Because you need both. You need the father to be that tough role model, but you need that mother to be that nurturer, someone who's loving and forgiving and makes you feel that you can make mistakes and cry and it's okay. But, you know, a lot of single mothers, they feel like, well, if I don't have that father, I want to baby him too much, so I gotta be harsh, you know, and
Or some of them can baby him a little too much.
And then there's the other extreme, you know, trying to protect him, and so he doesn't grow into the man that he needs to be, the self-sufficient man, because he's just a woman doing everything for him and taking care of him. And there's a lot of men that are stuck there too. And so when they get to be an adult, they look for a woman who does everything. She's got the job. She's paying the bills. She's taking care of all the business. And he's just kept kind of sitting around the house watching TV. And he doesn't know the other side of manhood, the responsibility side, because he didn't have it. That's a real crisis society. It really is. One of the things that prompted me even to write the book, The Female Solution, which, you know, it's all about family and how we reconnect our families and rebuild our families, because we as women for too many generations have not had the kind of balance that would have helped us understand our role in doing that. But one of the things that struck me was how many young people were growing up without their fathers. And the emotional impact of that absence. Either they were feeling the anger of their mothers, and with sons, the mothers often took that anger out on the sons unconsciously, saying things like, you're going to be just like your no-good daddy. Because, you know, we're hurt because our heart's been broken, the person that we needed to be by our side is not there, we're angry, and we take it out on our sons, who remind us of the father. We don't know we're doing that. But how damaging is that? So there's that, or... And it's in the case of young girls, they're missing the love of a father. So they go through life looking for the love of a man, and it comes in the form of of sex, but that's not really love. That's sex, you know, and so they end up getting involved with somebody. They got a physical relationship. They have a baby, but still no family. So that brokenness just continues as a pattern, generation after generation, and we don't know how to fix it because we don't understand it's broken. So what have you observed as, you know, seeing a lot of probably young men in your same situation in prison? Did you see a pattern of maybe a certain lifestyle that they may have drifted to that caused them to end up behind bars?
Yeah, and most of it is not having an identity.
Mm.
It's like we were all looking for an identity. And when you don't have strong, positive men surrounding you, then we look for an identity elsewhere, and often we find that identity in the street or in media. We look for media to tell us who we're supposed to be. I remember when I was a kid growing up in a house with all women, I started trying to figure out what role was I supposed to play as a man. What was my identity supposed to be as a man? And the only examples that I had were from my uncles and cousins who were all gang members. And then, and quite naturally, I tried to reject that as a 5, 6, 7-year-old kid. But then I started looking elsewhere for other examples to give me something different, but those examples weren't there. Everything that I saw directed me back to that stereotypical imagery of a black man. And, you know, turn on TV in the 80s, and every black person was a criminal or a crook. You go outside and look in a project, same thing, which in all actuality is a minority for black people, but somehow media has portrayed us to be this stereotypical image of a black man to be the majority. And so when you take those young men growing up in communities like ours and we don't have that example and we go to media imagery or other factors and people within our environment, and we're often misled to believe that that's who we're. And once I came to the conclusion that that's who I was supposed to be, I took it head on and started accepting it with a sense of pride. You know, I started saying that I had to be accept my misfortune and poverty, accept it and be proud about it, and start glamorizing the poverty as if it was something great.
Hmm. Yeah, I find that a lot of times that whole glamorization of the gang culture, the poverty, the crime, we see that in a lot of the music culture. And, you know, people, are, of course, are exploiting our misery and pain that they help create by providing this very imbalanced, unequal economic system. But how does a person come out of that state of being brainwashed where they're following self-destructive things?
It's hard because the years that we're being brainwashed are the most pivotal moments in our life. Those are the years that shape the mind of children. And that's why, you know, between the ages of 8 and 14 are years when kids are being influenced by media. And music, like you said, is music. So much of the music today is trash, and it is giving our kids a message. The music videos are putting out this imagery, and young black kids are looking at that and accepting that imagery as an identity of who we are, and they're following along with it. You know, we criticize it, but then you have some people who are actually making all of the money off of it, they defend it because they say, you know, it's just a form of art. And but art can shape the minds of children. And also, if those few that are making the money do not, the money's not being used to uplift our community, so it's just completely trash. But the way that we have to combat it is, as parents, we have to limit our children's exposure to this art that is actually shaping our children's minds. And we have to do everything we can. And that's why parenting is one of the most difficult jobs in the world, because it requires 24 hours hands-on. You know, when the child is not sleeping, you have to be mindful of what that child is doing and what that child is being exposed to, especially up until the child is 14 years old. Once the child has those foundation and morals and principles instilled at an early age, then you can rest assured that that child as a teenager is going to be making great choices. The child might slip in and there, but they're going to always go back to that foundation on what they were taught.
Yeah, I believe that if you can start out with a positive foundation, then even if they stray, they'll come back. So now, you grew up with a house full of women.
Yeah.
And usually, like around puberty, you realize there's something that you need that they cannot give you, because you need image of what you're growing into. At what age did you start to feel like, okay, I got to find some men to be around, this isn't working? I mean, but you just really, you know, and then sometimes it comes in the form of rebellion, or even speaking harshly to your mother, you know, just getting on your nerves, you know. I mean, when did you see your behavior changing as a young man in, you know, trying to express your independence, express your manhood, and what kind of things did you see yourself doing at that time?
I started very early. Around the age of 8 years old is when I really started to make that shift. And by the time I was 11, I was already in the streets.
Oh, wow.
But at the age of 8 is when I really started to make that mental shift, to where I started feeling my self-esteem was low. I started feeling that there was really nothing great for a young black man. I started believing that gangs in the hood was the epitome of success was being a gangster or a drug dealer. And I came up with that conclusion by the age of 9.
Wow. That's kind of scary, but with the absence of another male role model, what else would you know? I mean, I see that a lot of times, you know, because I taught school for a while. I kind of fell into teaching almost by accident, but I had a chance to be in the classroom from kindergarten all the way up to high school, and I did see a pattern with young men, and there was a point where I could tell which ones didn't have a father in the home. Usually they were very angry. There was kind of a frustration in them. They tended to be a little disrespectful to the female teachers, and they didn't really handle male authority very well, because they didn't have any. So they tend to be rebellious and highly emotional, I'd say. I mean, easy to fight, easy to get mad, easy to, you know, want to rumble, because they, you know, trying to express manhood in the way they thought manhood was like you say, you know, the gangbanger, the person that, you know, fights in the streets and all of that. and I noticed the difference between them and the ones who had fathers in the home, where there was a good relationship between the mother and father. Just having a father in the home doesn't mean it's a good relationship, but where the parents worked together as a team, you could see that there was a certain kind of balance in the child. They were more self-managed, self-controlled. They had more of a sense of dignity and pride in themselves. And so, you know, I observed two kinds of leadership. There was the male leader that was the disruptor in the class, the one that was rebellious, always ready to start fights, but might be the one that's admired by other young men and might even be one that's attracting other women, you know, the young girl. And then there was the leader, the one that was more academic, more studious, more favored by teachers because they were the ones that were behaving in a way we'd like a young person to behave. But that kind of person to be resented by other because they were favored by the adult. So I saw a dynamic happening, unfortunately, in the school where fights would break out. And I remember a horrific incident at the school that I grew up, that I went to, Finger Academy, here on the South Side, where an honor student was beat to death. And this happened several years ago. And it was right around the time that Chicago was trying to get the Olympics here. And the world heard about that. And it was so awful. You know, of course, Chicago lost the bid for the Olympics. They were like, oh, no, we don't go back. Violence, did they beat to death on honor students? Because some kind of way, you know, it just, a lot of things were happening. The gang violence had kind of shifted because they had combined some schools together. They closed some schools, so some of the gang people from another school were now going to this territory. And here this young man, honor student and everything else, somehow ended up being targeted by a group of people and was literally beat to death. And I remember examining that and thinking about how the dynamics in a school happens when nobody addresses the pain of the young men who are fatherless and angry, and so they explode at somebody who might have all the right things. But if you don't fix the broken child, that broken child will end up causing destruction for the unbroken child. So we can't just ignore the ones who are not behaving the way we would like. We have to look at why and help them with the problem. So,
yeah, because that broken child is going to become society's problem.
Yeah.
And I think the way our government looks at it is that that's the parents' problem, but eventually it's going to become society's problem, and society's going to pay for it, whether it's $50,000, $60,000 a year to incarcerate that child.
Yeah.
And it would have been a lot cheaper to spend $20,000, $10,000, $5,000 for a couple of years to help instill principles of freedom within that child.
Absolutely. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk about your book and, you know, of course, what went into putting your story into a book, and what are some of the things that you are able to share with young people to help motivate them, especially if they're going through some of these difficulties. And, of course, we'll hear from Zoe, who has raised a son. Now, I raised a daughter, and she always told me that experience is different because male energy is different than female energy. But we'd like, you know, when we come back to you to maybe give us some pointers on what we as mothers should be aware of when we see certain behaviors in our son, what would be the best way for us to respond. So we'll be right back after this quick break. We want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We will be right back. And, of course, if you're listening online, we want you to join this conversation. You can give us a call, 727-731-5192 on the On Air Network or on Blog Talk Radio, 515-605-9325. And we'll be right back after this quick break. So stay with us.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. And in case you didn't notice the resemblance, we're also three sisters.
We're going to be coming to you every week, sharing our successes and our mistakes as we navigate our lives as moms, wives, sisters, daughters, and of course, black women in today's world.
We'll talk about it all. Race, politics, religion, economics, culture, and we'll take a look at everything from whether or not to use corporal punishment to how do you teach your children about sex.
Look for our upcoming book, Growing Up Charles. It's a personal story about our lives growing up in Maple Park on Chicago's South Side. I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three black moms. Follow us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Three Black Moms.
Hi, I'm Naima. And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to people. In these times, people are using the internet to talk to everyone. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great news. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a media connection. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. We produce programs. Our audience members are people who shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repairs, transportation services, child care services. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your media connection. Just follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business
and we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and today's got with us the shop with Zoe. We're talking to an author, Ponte Bosco Adams, and we're talking about how we as mothers can be more sensitive to the needs of our sons and daughters, but of course, we want to take a look at our impact on young men. Many of us have raised sons without that male partner to provide the kind of image that we would want our sons to have. And so we have to fill in the gap the best way we know how, and it's not an easy task. So first of all, Conte, tell us about your book. Let me see if I can bring it up on the screen here as we talk about it. But tell us what went into deciding to put your story in a book.
I have an interesting story. In 2004, I was arrested for attempting to possess marijuana and sentenced 35 years in federal prison. At the time that I got arrested, I found out that my ex-girlfriend, whom I'd broken up with 3 weeks earlier, was pregnant. My child was conceived 3 weeks before I went to prison. And again, like we spoke about earlier, I grew up without my father, and I always told myself that I wanted to be the one to break that cycle. Started feeling like a little loser and decided that I was going to break out of prison to be there for my daughter and to be there for my child first. So I tried to escape, and I was captured, placed in solitary confinement. In solitary confinement, I tried to escape again, caught again. And after that, the United States Marshals declared me an extreme escapist, transferred me to a maximum security prison, locked me in a cell 24 hours a day. Inside that cell, they had a camera where they would watch me and make sure that I wouldn't try to escape again. I escaped from that prison and was all over the news, and they started calling me Houdini. So people became interested in my story because of the prison break. And National Geographic Channel produced a documentary about that third escape, and they aired it all around the world. And I would get mail from people who were inspired and touched by my story. People were saying that didn't belong in prison for 35 years for some cannabis. And they also said that I was smart, something I'd never really heard before. I've been praised for gangbanging and selling drugs, but never had I been praised for being smart or having a degree of intellect. And so they wanted to know more about my story. And so it was ironic that I had on one hand a group of people, many people whom I'd never even met, saying that I was smart and I did belong to be in prison. But on the other hand, you have the criminal justice system, which said something totally different, said that I belonged in prison and deserved to pretty much die in prison. And so I wanted to share my story to kind of help resolve this conflict and this ambiguity, to give people my authentic self and an understanding of what it was like for me as a child growing up in my community and how so many of us who are...
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Please hold and you'll be able to listen to the show.
Okay, go right ahead.
Yeah, so I wanted to give, you know, be open and transparent and help people understand how smart kids from out of the ghetto can find themselves caught up in the criminal justice system. And so I just wrote my story, and as I was writing it, I felt a sense of freedom because I found the purpose. Up until then, I didn't have any purpose. I was in prison. Was like,
please leave your message for
Coach Radcliffe.
That was it. But one.
So it's really a psychological breakdown of a young black man growing up in the hood here in the United States, and how I was able to identify the things that made me the person that I was and what I believed was necessary for me to be a better person. And as I started feeling a sense of freedom from writing that book, I came up with the title, and the title was Chasing Freedom. Notice this D-U-M rather than B-O-L, and that's because I realized that my entire life, I have been chasing freedom the wrong way. Freedom doesn't come from money. Freedom doesn't come from getting out of prison. Freedom doesn't come from moving out of the hood. Freedom comes from within inside. When you really look down inside and you find what your purpose is in life and you start taking steps to fulfill it, that's freedom. And so I self-published the book. Taught myself the law, fired my attorney, represented myself, and got myself out of prison 19 years early. And got out and turned my story, that book, into a movie that
You have reached the On Air Radio Network. Please state your name, and you will be entered into our studio.
Wow.
Please keep your phone on mute until you are ready to speak.
Very inspiring.
Please announce yourself.
And, you know, when I look at, matter of fact, I'm also going to bring your book up on the screen here. When I look at the way the criminal justice system works, now that cannabis is legal, how insane is it that they are having people saying that you should not get out of prison for something that now is legal. So we've got some callers on the line, and I'm going to see if I can bring your book up on the screen so that people can see it. And if you're listening online, you want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 727-731-5192. Please don't call both numbers because that'll cause some audio issues. Just call one of them. And
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So when you grow up in the hood, has your mother ever about moving you away from that environment?
Yeah, I think that's a big question, but when you have a parent who's probably on, government assisted welfare who can't afford even much less live in the hood, much less move out of that environment, again, I think that's a tough challenge for any mother. Because again, it's like it's a cycle that's been repeated. And often this environment is a comfort zone because that's all the mother knows.
Mm.
And a lot of times what hinders us is our fear of change, our fear of going somewhere unknown and trying to survive in an environment that we have never been exposed to. And that's what it's like trying to get a single black mother who grew up in the hood and who knows nothing but the hood to move out of there. It becomes even more because, for one, she's struggling to take care of her child in this community or this neighborhood that she's familiar with, where she has friends and family. And the rent and the bills are a lot less expensive than anywhere else. So it's a huge challenge and it's frightening for her to even have the idea of venturing out somewhere where she won't have that familiarity or that support.
Yeah.
Right now, in Wisconsin, one of my tenants is a single black mother with five young babies. She has managed to get a Section 8 housing voucher to live in rural Wisconsin. So, I mean, I think for her, was a lot of people from, you know, where she grew up, they couldn't leave. But she just wanted to get away from the kind of trauma in the inner city. So right now she lives in the right open, like in nature.
Yeah.
So I think it's easy for her kids to grow up. Of course, she's facing about the racial conflict there. You know, as I did too, when I brought my family living in rural Wisconsin where 99% people are white. So I'm actually become a mother to her, and I'm coaching her, you know, see things differently. So sometimes I feel like the segregation, the racial segregation is a huge issue that perpetuates the poverty and the mindset that people feel that's the only world that kids can grow up. I think sometimes it takes mothers that kind of resolve to
to break away because you can't find a place that it can be affordable. Like rural income is really cheap, you know. And if you can be on Section 8, same thing, public housing, public assistance.
That's interesting you say that because that kind of contributed to me having a low self-esteem. It can actually work if you have parents who are hands-on and making sure that their child is developing mentally correct in that environment. So, for example, when I was 6 years old, 5 or 6 years old, we moved from Compton to North Long Beach. North Long Beach was all white, predominantly white. Mm. And in North Long Beach, they had some housing projects. And we moved into these housing projects in North Long Beach. And the housing projects were predominantly black. They had some white people and other races. But when we would go to school, we would go to the school that was predominantly white. So you would have these handful of black kids coming out of the project going to this predominantly white school. And the contrast, the social contrast, it affected me so much to be living in a project where there is extreme poverty and then to go to a school where it is predominantly white and middle-class communities where we were getting free lunch in the school. We had green tickets where we would get free lunch. And those kids would come with lunch pails, Spider-Man, Superman lunch pails with all these good foods and treats and snacks. They would be dropped off in station wagons, and we would walk to school and pack 10 or 15 little black kids.
Wow.
And they would taunt us because of the project. The project was like this rock apple in this suburban community to where I'm sure they would, in their households, they would talk about the project, like, you know, there's poor black people. Stay away from there. You know what I'm saying? And so we represented the project because that's where we came from. And so we would be taunted by these middle-class kids because of our poverty and us being black, something that they weren't used to. And we, from the project, would internalize that because now we're being exposed to something we've never been exposed to. But that isn't for us. It's like being exposed to wealth or opportunity and then being told that that is not for you as a black person. This is strictly for us. You go back to the project. That's for you. And that did something to me. It made me feel like I wasn't like black kids. We weren't worth anything. I started feeling like the only thing for us was the project and the gangs and the drugs and the different things that came with. So when you take a young black person out of that community and put them in a community that is more predominantly white, the parents have to make sure that mentally that child understands that this is more an opportunity and that even if the community is saying that it's not for you, then it is for you. So it makes a little, you know, that type of situation would be challenging for a child also.
Definitely. I could see where it would really be destructive if no one explains. And, of course, as a child, how do you explain economic disparities like that? And how else can you interpret it other than, you know, they're saying we're not worthy because we live in these poor places and, you know, we're walking to school and they're getting driven to school. They got homemade lunches. We got the free lunch. So all of those things psychologically says to a child, I am of lesser value. I mean, that's what you're going to digest. We got a caller that wants to ask a question. And let's see, let me open the mic for 407-701, our dear sister Viata from Florida, our Friday and Sunday host, Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us today.
Grand Rising, Quante. Boy, you got an anointing on you, my brother. You have, what a powerful story. I was like so excited to hear your escape. Yay! I'm like cheering your escape. Yes. So thank you. Thank you for writing the book. But you are definitely guided by divine purpose. And my question to you is, what kind of music were you listening to growing up? Because we have now discovered that the music producers of rap artists have intentionally planned for people listening to rap music, crime and violence, go to prison because they have invested in prison. There are several videos out that have shown people who were in these meetings early on with music producers where they planned to hire rap artists to make music promoting crime and violence and drugs because they have invested in the prison. So my question is, what type of music were you listening to? And are you aware of this? If so, can you make a difference in the communities today about the influence of music?
Yeah, I used to listen to rap music when I was growing up. I think you're right. Music today is marketing, and it's used to shape the minds of people. Corporate America has taken over hip hop. Hip hop is no longer just coming from out of impoverished or underprivileged communities where people were expressing their rage and frustration with that impoverty. Hip hop is now a billion-dollar industry, and that's because corporate America has become involved, and corporate America has to make their money. And so what they do is they use music as a way to market their message and their product to our kids. That's why you hear songs talking about certain products, you know. My Adidas was the first one in the 80s, Run DMC, a rap song about Adidas that they didn't own and didn't have any share in, but had every black kid in America wanting a pair of Adidas. See it today with everything else from Louis Vuitton to Gucci to whatever, you know, guns, all that stuff is rap music is the way that not only corporate America, but people who don't want black society to progress market their propaganda and their trash to us. So the way we have to change it is we have to, because it's still our music, we have to stop supporting those companies and those people that are putting it out there. Like, you would never see me, I would never have a Gucci bag. I would never have a Louis Vuitton. I just wouldn't. And because it doesn't do anything to uplift my community, and I see so many rappers and so many people glamorizing that stuff in a way that, again, like I was saying, how we went to school and we our poverty was underscored by other communities of people. Rappers are doing the same thing. They're rapping about all of this expensive stuff and targeting it toward people in the hood who don't have it and who can't afford it, who end up believing that they are not worthy of anything and their esteem is battered because they don't have it. And then some of them start to commit crime, selling drugs, robbery, in order to get it. Because really want to look at the matter, like, a lot of our communities are not extremely poor. It's just that our resources are being misappropriated. We can survive off of pretty much anything. You're talking about a group of people who survive off of eating the leftovers of what slave masters were eating. You know, we ate pig feet and intestines and all of that, and we were able to survive. So we can survive off of anything and still be productive if we have that mindset. Thing now is that we have to start, it goes back to the whole purpose of this talk right here, is how do we as parents, kids so that they can be defensive towards this attack against us, because it is definitely mental and cultural attack against us.
Yeah, so how about, Quante, we create new words to the rap songs? Because rap is an art. We don't have to eliminate rap music, but how about we start producing our own music, creating uplifting songs that will change, turn this around, the negative words, the negative energy. We need to, I'm suggesting we need to create our own rap songs, because rap is beautiful if the words are beautiful, if the words are uplifting. We got to tell these producers who are invested in prison to go take a hike and start creating our own positive, uplifting, high vibration music. So that's what I want to instill in you, is to go on that path with your amazing book, is to promote music that's uplifting, that can change, turn this prison thing around, and tell and help these producers lose money. We can no longer be investing in music that is taking our children to prison.
Yeah, and I think the problem is that who runs the record labels? We don't run them. And the music industry is so, there's those few studios or labels that run everything, and even with television and media, those few people who own everything have all of the money, and they have the ability to take whatever they want and make it go viral.
Yeah, but you
and
got
the problem
that's
is
why,
the people who are positive don't have
that's
that
why
ability. They
right
don't
now.
Say that again.
The universe is exposing people like Diddy right now because all that corruption has been hidden. But this is the year for evil to be revealed. And hopefully, because Diddy is
for
where
sure.
he is in the light with his corruption, that this will change things, that people will begin to see the evil that's coming out, and we are responsible for creating something new.
We are, and I think the way that we have to do it is we have to do it from the ground up, is we have to be the ones to not support the stuff that is destroying our communities. Let's not put our money or our time and energy into, you know, listening to it, purchasing it. We have to boycott it ourselves, and the way we boycott it is with our attention and our finances. Because you're going to have studios and labels that are going to push their agenda. Like, my movie was number one on Peacock the first 3 weeks. And Peacock, NBC didn't put any marketing into it. They were marketing other things, but people just came out because of my story, and it was the most streamed show on Peacock. But just imagine having the marketing into it, and it could have been really huge, but you have certain stories that, you know, they're not going to get that back in if it's not. You know, if somebody in there, if that exec doesn't say, look, I want this to be the message, then they're going to do their best to bury it.
Well, let's hold that thought just a second. We can take a quick break. But when we come back, I want to address some of the things we've been talking about, the alternative ways that we can empower ourselves to get out a message, and more about your film and, you know, how it came to be that your story was put, you know, on screen, and even some choices that people are making in what they allow into their homes when they have children, so that they can be more aware and more conscious of how they're bringing that poison to the minds of their children voluntarily. Nobody's making us do this. So we'll talk about that when we come back. And Viata, you hold on, and we're going to come right back. And, of course, if you are listening online and want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325 or 727-731-5192. We want to hear from you. Make sure you call in. And if you're watching or YouTube on the Female Solution, you can write in your comments. We'll share them with our viewing and listening audience. We'll share a few comments when we come back after this quick break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be right back, so stay with us.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Love Hope Radio. Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul, whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456. And schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Have
you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Latif. And, of course, we've got our Thursday morning host, Zoe Ma. And we're talking with our special guest today, Conte Bosco. Adams, how do you get the name Bosco?
Soccer drink. My mother used to drink.
I remember that.
Soccer drink. Which
yeah, I do remember Bosco. So before the break, of course, we were talking about the impact of rap music, and in addition to the music, there's the violent video games. A few years back, I set up this website, Women Against Violent Entertainment, that I believe many women feel that as mothers, we need to have some kind of united front about protecting the minds of our children. But the first defense is our own awareness. And I have been in many homes, and they have small children, and people are watching shows on TV, horrific violence. You know, people getting shot, robbed, stabbed, beat up. And you got a two-year-old sitting in the floor, and you know, and the parents are just oblivious that this is going into this child's mind. And they're just unconscious. I've been in the car with people, and they're playing this rap music with lyrics that don't need to be repeated anywhere. And they got the two-year-old in the seat learning all the words, because that's going into your mind, your subconscious, your conscious mind. And we're just unaware. Was there any images that you had growing up that maybe shaped your thinking in a way you didn't realize it, you know, things that you were exposed to that probably shouldn't have been exposed to that young?
Yeah, lots of it. Lots of the stuff we saw on TV, even just, you know, the... You watching TV and then the black guy who burglarizes the house.
Mm.
He starts saying, oh, that's me right there.
Ooh, wow.
The only black guy on TV. And that's why I like the Cosby Show, because it was first time. Well, even in Jefferson's, too. Not the Jefferson's, but what's the one with...
What was Steve Urkel?
No.
What
can I?
It might have been the Jeffersons. What, with George Jefferson?
No,
and the
High Rise. Janet Jackson and Jackson.
Oh, Good Times.
Good Times.
At least the father was in the house. And, you know, that was the whole bit.
Good Times was actually a good show. It portrayed the whole black family in and what was the name? Penny was in school. Everybody was doing good.
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing that I have talked to some of the people who have worked on these sets, and I know, of course, with Good Times, the John Amos, who played James Evans, talked about the struggle that he had to keep, you know, the whole family image intact and not make it this, you know, whole comedy thing. And he had some creative differences with the writers, and of course, you know, he ended up they moved his character off. They had him killed off some kind of way.
Yeah.
And the family sort of fell apart after that, even though they tried to keep the thing going.
Yeah.
Now, but, we we also had a chance to talk to the woman who played Florence, the maid. What's her name?
Yeah.
She, and of course, she was found. She also created the sitcom 227.
Yeah.
And she was explaining to us the struggle that she had to get the writers to make sure there was a strong man in the house. And she wanted a strong father. He had his own construction business. She really had to fight for that. Marla Gibbs, thank you. Thank you, Clinton. Yeah. Marla Gibbs, yes. She really had to struggle with the producers to make them let her have a man in her life, because they wanted to be, you know, building up single black women, no men. But she said, no, I want not only to be married, I want my husband to be an independent businessman. And she had to really fight for that because they didn't want that. They wanted them to be the single mothers, no men, you know, all the men are no good and all that. So, I mean, these are conscious decisions that producers make when it comes to deciding the images they're going to give to our children. And we, the women, we have to be, first of all, aware that our children are being programmed with these negative things. And number two, to really fight to stop the pushing of negative culture on our children.
Yeah.
Because it's being done purposely.
And then it's funny that we have to sit and we have to talk like this. And some people who don't understand will be like, why do we make a big deal out of producers and different media imagery producers, how their idea of expressing art form? And one of the reasons why is because historically blacks have had our culture taken away from us, and another false culture have been programmed upon us for hundreds of years. Like, we have been robbed and stripped of our identity and slave masters, in order to keep us enslaved, have forced a new identity upon us. And so to this day, we have to be very skeptical, or sometimes it can just be the trauma of slavery, that when something is given to us, is it really good for us, you know, or is it another way to prevent us from being our natural selves? Is it another way to enslave us, you know? And so we still deal with that trauma to this day. So every bit of information and every bit of media entertainment that's given to us, we tend to kind of look at it critically and try to find the underlying theme behind it.
Yes, we really do. We got a few comments here from our Facebook and YouTube viewers, and of course our dear sister Zelda says, "Grand wife and beautiful queen sister Zoe Mine, I'm looking forward to another great show." Yes, it is. We're so grateful to have our guests. And she said the same thing happened in Chicago Stateway Gardens in the, yeah, it was horrible. Yes. The whole thing with the projects, and then trying to take the children and bus them to another school where everybody's rich, and then you got to go back home to where it's poor. What did they do that with to your mind?
Yeah.
And she said, Tyler Farrell MacArthur says, excellent commentary, informative program, and progress. Thank God. Yes, thank you, brother. We appreciate you. And he says, I commend Brother Q. Could you please ask the brother what his street name was growing up in Chicago? Oh, okay. Okay, yes. Yeah, so, did you have a street name, or was it Bosco?
I grew up in Compton, California.
Oh, okay.
My name is Bosco.
Oh, okay. All right. So in Compton, he was Bosco.
Yeah.
Now, tell us about the film that was made. Was it based on your book, and how did that come about?
Yeah, when I was in prison, an independent producer reached out to me about making a movie based off the documentary in my book. And I agreed and gave him the option to do so. But when I got myself out of prison, they still hadn't done anything with it. So I got out and started working with them. And we got out and raised the money independently, and I started putting the cast together, and we independently produced the movie. And once the movie was done, NBC Universal picked it up, licensed it, and made it the Peacock original. So everything was done independently.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, that's
amazing. By the way, my son actually going to school to be an actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe he will play in one of your future movies.
Yeah, definitely do more.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, I'm so inspired by your experience in your book, and I feel like also your concern about the young people being brainwashed by the poisonous music. So I think, you know, now let's not... Right now, the whole world is embarked on a new era that actually the movement will make a difference. Just look at what's happening in Columbia University. The protest, that's ushering a new era. You know, actually, that same thing happened in 1989 in China. The college students went to protest all over China, and I was one of the students.
Wow.
In 1989, yeah. So I traveled 30 hours on train from my university to Beijing to protest on Tiananmen Square. And there was two issues. You know, the students in Beijing, the college students in Beijing, they care about, actually is the precursor of color revolution. So overthrow the Chinese government. So overthrow to end the socialist system in China. But the rest of us, from the rest of China, we actually fight against corruption. And then at that time, you know, because there were two women, our woman was overshadowed by the political side of it.
Yeah.
And so very few people knew why we went to Beijing. Even though, you know, I was an English major, I studied English, be an interpreter, but I didn't know anything about democracy during the whole movement. I didn't even know the Beijing student had a different agenda. They actually created a narrative to attract us from all over China to Beijing, but they have totally different agenda.
Now, I'm told that they won't even talk about Tiananmen Square in the schools, I mean, even as a historical reality of this major protest. Are they not wanting to plant the idea that young people have the power to create a revolution in society? Is that why it's not talked about anymore, or are they feeling like, okay, we solved the problem, let's not bring it up? I mean,
I think it's the propaganda. Whoever controls the propaganda, controls the narrative, and can lead the movement to a different direction than what it is. What happened in 1989 in China, it was a three layer. And then the third layer, very few people talk about it. It was a part of the Chinese Civil War, date back in 1949.
Mm.
Because the whole movement, even though the National Guard, American, because at that time there was no National Guard in China, there was only very few police, most of them are soldiers, and so they were called to be act as National Guard, but they were not given weapons. The National Guard came with a gun with no bullets.
That's interesting.
Until the very last day. So who actually fired the first shot? My hypothesis was the government, they sent spies from Taiwan, they sent spies to China as the continuation of Chinese Civil War, back in 1949. And there was about almost 17, the spies was caught by China and put in the prison. And when they came out, they sued the government in Taiwan because they say, you promised us if we will ever be in jail, you will compensate us, and you refuse. So they sued the Taiwanese government for damages. Otherwise, the Chinese government would say that, but we never trust government. You know, at that time, they know that was just not true. Until I actually accidentally come across the news from Taiwan that actually 17 spies were sued the Taiwanese government and award $2.3 million. control the narrative. And they, so we have to be very careful. We have to true to our base and not being taken advantage by some people. Because right now we are in the election. You know, so there's many things, the political, and then the students want justice. They want the, you know, the good for the average people, that we don't want America to become a United States of Israel. You know, we want the money to protect our own American citizens. We don't want to send money to overseas. And plus, through a bill, they ban TikTok.
So you know, I'm looking at the power of social media right now. And like you say, you have people wanting to maintain control. And this has been the case even during the student movement here. There was a whole era where young people just protested what was unjust. And the music became a very powerful tool to motivate people to get involved in political activism. This is why it was hijacked the way it was.
Exactly.
And now you have record companies and everything in cahoots with corporate interests, in cahoots with government interests, to put money behind negative lyrics that will make people do self-destructive things, glorifying drugs and illicit sex with people you don't love and gang violence and all of those self-destructive behaviors, leading them into prison, which is another business. And unless young people are schooled early that you will be manipulated to destroy yourself or other people's profit if you follow what is told right out, then they will follow that unfortunate path. And if you don't have parents in the home that are harmoniously raising you and giving you principles, that's when you fall prey to the streets. And the streets are the playground of, like you said, corporate America, where they can market everything and use you and manipulate you to destroy yourself. And this is global. So when you look at what happens, it all comes down to the family. And this is the message we say all the time. If our families are intact, if you have two emotionally healthy people raising children with good values, it doesn't matter what's happening in the world. You are protected because in your home, you're teaching love. You're demonstrating love. You're demonstrating confidence. You're giving them a
chance. And today's streets are social media. We have to be careful about putting phones and giving our children access to this world that they're going to get through these telephones until they're secure enough to navigate it.
Yeah.
If not, they don't get consumed whether it's from pornography or whatever. It's easily accessible on these devices. These devices were made to capture and control the minds of the people.
But I also feel, you know what, we can't only let the parents fight at home, because the parents are overloaded with their responsibilities. And you have to believe it takes a village to raise a child. So
it does.
The parents to band together. We need to go down the street. The parents need to get into activism. That we make a statement, that we tell our children what our voice value we are standing for. Because at home, you don't have much time to talk to your kids. They need to do homework, you need to cook, and then you put them to bed. Very few. But I think on weekends, we should come out. Instead of go to some, you know, shopping or something, community, we should get out, and we actually start to make a statement. Let the students that in Columbia come out. Maybe we will, as a mother, we will come out in some of the local parks, we in the community, we say we fight against the music of violence that poison our children. Then that will tell our children, instead of hush hush, like in silence, not so bold enough. We need to raise our voice that we will say no to that music, and the kids can learn listen to that. If we just say things at home, the kids just say, you are just complaining. But even when we make it into the street, make it a call, make it a movement.
You can tell she's still an activist, right?
You're ready to get out and say the protest.
It's a fire.
How
I look at, and like you just said, Frontel, the social media is today's street. That's where you can either pick up something negative or pick up something positive. And I think it's more powerful to be strongly for something than even to put energy in being against something. Because if we put out a positive message and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it and repeat it, then that becomes the dominant message that is on social media. Now, we know that you can go to, you know, all the Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, you can go to all the social media, you can go on YouTube, and you can find wherever your mind is. You can find fighting, you can find pornography, you can find the lowest thing, and it's going to be a reflection of where your state of mind is. But once we raise the state of mind, once we raise the consciousness of the people where they desire to experience something better, and we give them, this is like if you have choice between good food and bad food. I mean, you can get the nasty stuff that's no good for you and doesn't taste good, or you get a really healthy meal that tastes good. Which one are you going to choose? I mean, you might be used to the nasty food that's unhealthy, but if you have a choice of something good and healthy, tastes good, good for you, you're going to choose that because you're going to learn that that actually makes you feel better. So I think we have the power to influence social media in a way that makes it a tool for uplifting as opposed to a tool for destruction, as it has been used by many entities. I think we have the power to do that. And Viata has another comment, and I think we got a couple others on the switchboard as well. Yes, Viata, go right ahead.
I just wanted to say in conclusion, both my sons were raised in a Christian environment. I really insisted on the Bible. We went to church. But when they got older, their friends were listening to rap music. So the influence is always going to be there as children get older and the parents are not as influential. So my thinking is we got to offer them balance. They're going to listen to rap music if their friends are listening to it. But we got to offer them a village of sorts that says, okay, let's talk about the rap music you're listening to, and let's also listen to some classical, let's listen to this, let's listen to other music. Otherwise, I think maybe your guest can testify that maybe he didn't have all those other options of music, that his parents weren't offering him or people weren't offering him other options for music. All he had was rap music, or I'm not sure, that's what I would ask him. Did you have any other options other than rap music, or were you introduced to other music? Because that's what the difference was with my sons. I was introducing them to all kinds of music, but by the time they got to be teenagers, rap music was cool, but they had also heard other music growing up.
I think what I'm hearing is a strong foundation at home. So no matter what type of music they listen to, you have that foundation. You instill some principles in them. And I think the difference is when you have a household or communities where there isn't principles instilled, there's no religious principles, there's no spiritual principles, there's nothing. I didn't have that. And so when we have households that don't have that, and I think that goes back to everything that we're talking here, like she's saying, is that no matter what you're exposed to, if you have that foundation at home that gives you that strength and gives you certain principles and a certain self-esteem that makes you confident and positive, that to no matter what you encounter, you're going to make the right decision. And you're not going to let the negative stuff influence you in a way that takes you off of that foundation. And I didn't have the foundation, so it doesn't matter what type of music, but when you don't have that foundation and then you're exposed to something negative, most likely that negativity is going to win.
And you know, Viata, there are a lot of young people that are producing Christian rap. So you can always use, I mean, it's not the rap that's the problem. It's the lyrics. And your lyrics are going to be a reflection of your state of consciousness. Is it high or is it low? I mean, I've heard some really good Christian rap, some spiritual rap, some revolutionary rap. So
I think.
And then to be clear, now, because y'all, it's not even really about the music. It's about having that core strong foundation to where you're strong enough to not be influenced by it, or you're strong enough to not let that stuff take over your mind subconsciously. That's what it's about. But the problem is that a lot of us come from families and communities that don't have that foundation to where we're not strong enough to make the right choices or decisions. And with that, we should be limited from being exposed to certain things.
Yeah, I think that has an impact, the foundation in your home. And the if you don't provide anything, then you leave a void and it's going to be filled with someone else. We've got some comments from Facebook, and Deborah, our third Saturday host, says, blessing to you all. They have agitators and movements today. Yes, they do. You look at people who, even when they had the Black Lives Matter movement, you had people that were creating conflict. So anytime we get ready to protest something or create a positive movement, there are always going to be people to try to steer it toward the negative for economic gain. And all we have to do is just know that it's always about the money. How can people profit from our disunity? And Deborah said, you're speaking truth, Zoe. Yes, absolutely.
I'm gonna have to drop off here in a minute if we can.
Yes. Well, of course, we're going to take one last break. So we'll give you a chance to say your last words before we go. Give us some words of advice, words to mothers who may be raising teenagers or those soon to be teenagers, and they see their children drifting away, maybe going toward the streets, maybe not listening or listening to the wrong things. What can mothers, their children that may be feeling the anger and frustration that you may have felt as a young man, how can we reel them back in so they don't get lost to the streets?
Do not become angry, and don't express it in the form of anger. You have to keep coming in the form of love, invite and bring other people to talk to that child in the form of love. And the more you can, the more that positive energy, the more those positive things, the more encouragement you can give that child, then the better that child's chances of overcoming everything that child is going through. And one thing we have to remember is that even if that child doesn't be receptive of it at the moment, it is definitely being programmed in that kid's subconscious, and there's going to be a time when that child is going to have to make a decision, and they're going to reflect back on everything that you're telling them. Because we have to understand that 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, those are the years of rebellion. And but even still, you have to keep putting that encouragement and keep putting that positive words and that love into that child. And once that child gets out of that rebellious phase, they're going to reflect back on everything that you told them. They might be 19 years old, and all of a sudden they were in trouble at 14, 15, 16, and at 19 years old, they become make 180-degree change. They become a better person because they're going to remember everything that you told them. They're going to remember the love, and they're going to remember all of that stuff is going to be in that subconscious, and they're going to make that positive switch. So you just can't give up on it. You just got to keep being positive and do your best to surround that person with positive energy and love, and take them away from the things that are pulling them into that negative cycle.
Absolutely. Can't give up on them. Well, we certainly do appreciate those words of wisdom. And tell us once again how we may get a copy of your book.
You can find it on Amazon, or you can just go straight to my website, QuanteBoscoAdams.com. If you just Google my first name, my website, and all that stuff will pop up on it. You Google the movie Bosco, and just, you know, it'll tell you about the real characters, the
person that it's based on, the producer, and all my information to pop up there also.
All right. And that is Chasing Freedom. That's spelled F-R-E-E-D-U-M. And, of course, it's now a Peacock original film, yes. So now people want to see the film that they Google Bosco or Quante Bosco Adams.
Yeah, if they Google either one, all that stuff will pop up. You can Google Bosco, B-O-S-C-O, or you can Google my first name, Q-U-A-W-N-T-A-Y, and everything will pop up.
Well, that is fantastic, and we certainly do appreciate you coming on with us today and giving us an opportunity. Oops, sorry. Sorry. Put the wrong thing here. And we certainly do appreciate you giving us an opportunity to learn more about your book and your life, and we thank you for your words of encouragement, inspiration, and insight, and we'll be certainly looking forward to hearing more about your speaking. Now, are you going to be speaking to some young people today here in Chicago?
Yeah, so I got to wrap up some things and start getting ready for that. I'm going to be speaking to some youth out here in Chicago.
All right. Well, thank you so very much, and we'll look forward to having you come back these days real soon. All right. We're going to take one last quick break, and we'll be right back. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naomi, and if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world using an electronic device to talk to people. In these times, people are using the Internet to talk to everyone. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a medium. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. E-Produce Program. Our audience members are people who stuff. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repair, transportation services, child care service. Whatever you're selling, they need funds. Hear your needs. Follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business making your money.
And we're back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV Show. I'm Naima Latif, and of course, we're with Zoe Mon. We've had a fabulous conversation with our guest, and we want you to take a look at that book because it is a story of triumph. And we've got some callers. Of course, he had to leave a little earlier before the show, so I apologize for not giving you an opportunity to speak to him before he had to leave. But we've got a caller opening in area code 111111. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Oh, praise God, praise God. Assalamu alaikum.
I like Brother Neil, and thank you for writing in your comments so we could share it with our guests. We appreciate that.
Yes, and I appreciate the show. It's very uplifting, and it's addressing topics that definitely need to be addressed because we're going to put a name, at least I'm going to put a name, and I say we because I like to say we in terms of who Jesus said, when two or more gather in my name, there'll be power. See, I'll be in the midst. That Holy Spirit is really busy. Just like Ziyada said, this is about evil. And what Zoe Masi, and she was right on point. The Holy Spirit, they were reading my mind. That's why the Spirit was transferring it. When it, she talked about community, community responsibility, and when she talked about it takes a village, because as and I'm gonna come back home, because I thought the brother Quandre, Q, I just tuned it to Q. He sounded like a brother. Quandre,
yes.
Quante, okay. God has really been working with the brother, and I definitely look forward to getting this movie and looking at and reading this book. But what I want to address this morning, he talked about a lot of the issues and a lot of the problems in the black community, in the black diaspora, which a lot of people do. I hear, I've been hearing it for years. Since I was born in 65. I grew up on 5525 South Lafayette. That's a block off of State Street, 55th and Garfield, which is the middle of Chicago if you do it geographically by map. 0 to 100, State Street separates east and west. So it's the heart of Chicago, the middle of the city, where in Midway Liquors is where all your major, for the tri-state area, all your 55th and State, where all your drug distribution was done, all of it, for the United States and probably, most places. But anyway, the point being, when we talk about the black community, I hear people talk about what they do, and what Viata said is so important. It's our responsibility to expose our children to morals, to culture, to different things, and their diet. Because somebody brings something, just because I go over to Naima's house and say and take a fifth of liquor, don't mean Naima got to eat it. I mean drink it. And same thing with the food. I was thinking about all those so-called food places they put in our community. So, and I say our because it's we. I'm an American. So we need this we and they language. We need to put a name on they. They is not the white man, the blue man, the green man, the red man. They is Satan, evil. Just like Brother El Shabazz, formerly known as Malcolm Little, Malcolm X, when he started realizing and coming into his Holy Spirit knowledge and God knowledge, just like Martin Luther King, and when he started talking about it ain't about no white and black, it's about good and evil. So when we say, I'm calling roll call in Chicago, so when we say who you with, it ain't about no colors, it ain't about no white and black, we and them, it's about good and evil. And when God's people start coming together, that's when that evil raises its head. That's when that evil starts acting up and trying to corrupt your children and trying to basically look at all the things that you haven't learned, because my mama Z, I call her Zelda, she talks about big whiz, and I play chess, probably the best at it. I ain't gonna say the word, but I'm good, put it that way. But anyway, and I challenge and bet anybody, because that's what we say, bet, when you want to talk all that other smackdown and eliminate the ones who talk it. Because we live it. We walk it like we talk it, like Brother Gator say. We live it. We growing up Chicago, and I'm one of them brothers, in fact, one of the men of God and the children of God was born into it. And I ain't asked to be in it, but we don't just talk it, we be about it. So when we be about it, when other folks are almost cursed, when we be talking, we say, bet, put up, or shut up, and let's do this right now. So therefore, we need to do, we have to come together as people and take the responsibility of our culture, because it's our culture. Other cultures, just like Zoe said, they look at us, they just don't say nothing. They say, why is our culture leading all the dysfunctional categories when y'all supposed to be the most spiritual? Those are the questions I get when I'm worldwide, from India and other people.
I think you made a point that,
I didn't mean to say baby, I'm sorry.
To recognize when it comes to choices. And thank you so much for calling in. We're going to take another call before we go. But I want to just visualize this for just a moment. You're standing in a pool of water. Let's say the water is up to your waist. Now, as long as you're standing up, you're above water, and you can breathe, right? But if you bend down and go underneath the water, and if you stand in the water, you will drown, right? Well, these people are drowning us. They're trying to drown us. Well, actually, they're not. They're at a lower level that's below your head, so you can't drown unless you go beneath the water. It's the same thing when we talk about so-called evil. It's just a lower vibration. It's a lower level of consciousness. If you don't dip down into it, it can't affect you. You will never drown as long as you're standing up above the water and the water is at your waist. You have to go down lower than the water. It's the same thing. Everything is based on where you are in your own state of mind. If you're down there where people are fighting, if you're down there where people are envious and jealous and angry and unforgiving, if you're down there, then you're going to experience what's down there. If you're under the water, you're going to experience drowning. So it's always a choice of what you want to experience based on where you choose to keep your head. Is your head going to be in the higher realms or is it going to be in the lower realms? Well, no, you can't say someone is drowning me. You chose to bend down to that water. So no one's making us do these things. Everybody's having their own choice. And if you're in a household and you and your partner choose to fight, you choose to be unkind to each other, you choose to not cooperate and work together so you can provide a harmonious home, that's a choice that you're making. And the fallout of that is that your child doesn't have that harmonious household. So, again, it's choices. And it's not about blame. It's us taking responsibility for the choices that we're making.
I also want to jump in a little bit. I really agree with about folks said that what mother wants to do, even you are in a single parent household. So you can't, you know, not everyone have a work with a partner, and a lot of household are single parent household.
Right.
So we can't now just blame. Okay, you know, because we don't have two parents, so we can't do this job.
That's why you need a village. You know, you need more than just one person. You need friends, you know, neighbors, family. You know, we need to have more than just us. And I think that's a mistake we make as women, thinking, oh, I can't do this by myself. I must be a failure. No, you're not supposed to do it by yourself. It takes a village to raise a child. It takes more than just the people in your family. It takes, you know, and that's what we have to do is make alliances.
And then a lot of times we, as a mother, we feel we did the best we could, and then we feel like we have to do an A-plus job. But you know what? Like I said, I talked to you the other day. I did a little experiment with my son, and I asked my son, how do you grade me as a mother just like you grade your teacher?
Yeah,
you know, like
A, B, C, D, F.
Yes. So my son gave me a B.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right. Hey, you know,
you know, that was
you got a B?
A.
Yeah. Keep working, mind you get an A.
I think that's maybe as a mother we should be objectively face ourselves. Are we doing a good job?
Yeah.
Even though we say, oh, we put 100% of our effort into it. But you know what? The performance is actually being judged not by us, by our children.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, when the kids in as like an 8-year-old or 10-year-old, we maybe ask our children to grade our performance.
That's
a job review.
That's I like that idea. That's a good one.
Then we have to give them a voice. A lot of times the children do not have a voice in the household. They have to take whatever we give to them.
Right.
And they show their resentment.
When they're a teenager,
one of the reasons they actually move away from the parents because they feel they cannot communicate with the parents anymore. Because we decide, well, to be told in the household because we are the head of our household. But sometimes they want a voice. So if we give them a chance to say, give us a job review, performance review, what do you think? Are we B, A, B, C? Then we know that what they are thinking.
And we have to be willing to let them explain what things that they think we can improve on and take them seriously because they have a right to, like you say, express their opinion. We got a couple of the calls. Let's see if I can squeeze them before we go. 706-202, I believe we got Baba Kwame on the line. Grand Rising, thank you for joining us.
Assalamu alaikum and greet. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
Okay. And, you know, I came in late, and my brother was talking about the day, and we're using that an hour. We've got to change how we use the language, because it's when you say they, it's the Y, really. T-H-E and capital Y. The why. Why are they doing this? What are the reasons we're allowing this to go on in our community? And we are a people that have a culture that once upon a time that we did not have what we call homelessness in our community, because everybody was able to go to a space where people would give nurturance and feed the person. We used to have homes where you had a big mama. And so now you're looking at parenting, and the word is pair. They're single household mothers. So there's not a pair there. They're single household mothers. So we got to address how we use the language. And we are using the language which keeps us in this constant loop of repeating this spell. And until we change our thoughts, we're not going to change our outcome. We have to change our thoughts to change our outcome. And
I agree.
It takes the thing that we keep saying, we say it takes a whole village, original statement. It takes a whole W-H-O-L-E village. It does not take a village.
Right.
It takes a whole village. And so when we learn to use, and when we talk about our race is a word in which I coined the phrase in saying the original universal race, is because you're looking at the first people. The original universal race. And so once we begin to redefine ourselves, we can do better for ourselves. But as long as we keep using the language of being oppressed, we will keep being oppressed.
Female Solution Global Radio TV show. Thank you so much, Zoe Ma, for your wisdom. And thank you to all of you who listened in and called in. And, of course, we want you to join us here tomorrow for Health and Well-Being with Beata. And we're going to continue to take a look at our responsibility as mothers and what we need to do to change this culture so that we can give health and well-being to our sons and daughters, and we can give them a healthy appetite for good, wholesome lyrics in music, good, wholesome entertainment, and good, wholesome family lives. We can do that, and it doesn't matter what anybody else is doing. We have the power to do it ourselves.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So we thank you all, and until tomorrow, continue to shine.
India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Dziękuję, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Madasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Jerez, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakor, Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.